This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Governor Jesse Ventura, the man who led the great state of Minnesota from 1999 to 2003, author of several best-selling books, and a man who's dismayed with the American political system. We'll talk with him about a few different things, including where our country and our world are going in 2014. Also on the show, the famed clothier who resides right here in Baton Rouge, Manuel Martinez, the man who migrated from Mexico, will be here to talk about fashion and the world of style and what makes a man and a woman look good in their clothes. We'll talk with Manuel Martinez and Jesse Ventura, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest to begin the hour is Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota for one term, 99 to 2003, former mayor of Brooklyn Park, fifth largest city in Minnesota, 91 to 95, best-selling author, professional wrestler, Navy SEAL, a man who has a background like no one else in American life today. Good morning, Governor Ventura.
Hi, Jim. I guess it comes down to that I can't hold a job for over 4 years.
And to be the great American that you are, you spend much of your time in Mexico, where you are situated right now.
Yes, I got a new show called Ask the Grid. We do it from Ask the Grid. It's on Ora, ORA.TV, you can go to just Jesse Ventura Ask the Grid, and I love it because I'm not governed by the FCC. There's no government involvement whatsoever. The person who owns the company ultimately is not from the United States, so therefore they don't care what I say being critical of the United States. I don't have to worry about any type of censorship. And it's just fun. It's like me having the ability to do a 10 to 12 minute wrestling interview on any subject that I want to interview on. And what could be better for me than that?
Well, you're a guy who could have been a contender. You were a governor of one of the most enlightened states in the United States, in Minnesota. You probably could have won a second term. You might be a viable presidential candidate. Most people who think they can be president run for president. It's an intoxicating elixir. Why did you decide to go in the media rather than pursue a career in politics?
Well, the simple answer is the longer you're in politics means you have to hang out with Democrats and Republicans because they're the predominant force there. You got to be amongst them. And I find that after about 4 years of being with them, I feel like I need a shower. Can I be any more blunt than that?
Well, you could be a force for change.
Well, that's true, but you also have to live your life, too. And when you hang out with a bunch of criminals, you certainly don't want it rubbing off on you. And that's what I find the Democrats and Republicans. They clearly showed me this past fall when they shut the government down over their political squabble that they clearly put their political parties ahead of the nation. There's no doubt about it. It's their party first, then it's their money people second, and we, the country, the people of the country, might be third. I haven't figured out if something else could push us to fourth or fifth.
Well, I think many people would agree with you about what you're saying regarding the system being broken, but to call them criminals, are they really criminals?
Well, yeah, in a lot of ways. They get benefits you don't get. Like if you look at all their incomes, they get the benefit of insider trading. I remember I did research on this for one of my books and found out that the average congressman makes more on the stock market than does the billionaire. I can't think of his name now off the top of my head. But no, they're privy to insider trading by the things in the committees they're in. They know the laws they do, what stocks are going to flourish and what aren't. And they get a return on the stock market of, I think, around 15% annually. congressmen and senators.
Mm-hmm.
Now you tell me anybody else that Warren Buffett, that's what it is. That's the guy. They make more on their return than Warren Buffett gets.
Well, it is true that many people in public life, they go there as relatively modest people as far as income, and they come away and they move into big homes and
live lavish lives. And their salaries are only, a congressman's salary is only $175,000 a year. How do they become millionaires so quick if they pay taxes too? It's because they're privy to insider trading. They're privy to things that we are against the law for us. We go to jail, you know? Just like their whole system they've set up, Jim. It's a system based upon bribery, money raising, bribery.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if we do that in the private sector, you go to jail for it, don't you?
Well, what about campaigns? The campaigns, they're flooded with money. We have these commercials where people are attacking each other. You have guys, yep, like you guys like Governor Christie in New Jersey. Where else but in politics could a guy like Governor Christie be characterized as a tough guy?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and also you've got the fact that they're not held accountable. Thanks to our illustrious Supreme Court decision that says corporations have the same rights as individuals, well, then how come corporations don't pay the same taxes as individuals if they're the same? And now they've allowed them into the political process where corporations now choose your next president by the money they pump in, and they're free to do so. Now, I'm all for open, but I'm all for they can give as much money, not corporations, but an individual, but I'm for open disclosure. That way, if I say I were to run for president, and I know three very wealthy people, Vince McMahon, Mark Cuban, and Donald Trump, let's say they all gave me $25 million apiece to run for president. Well, I would have to then disclose that so you, the voter, would know who owns me. I've come up with a great method, Jim, of what should be the law. You know what that is? All presidential candidates should be required to wear NASCAR suits. So that they have to wear patches over who owns them. And that way we, the voters, will then be informed. We'll be able to look at them, and by the size of the patch, we'll know who their major contributors are and who controls them.
Mm-hmm. Should they have to pass a physical fitness test like you did in the Navy?
No, not at all. Just put them in NASCAR suits. We just need to know. I don't begrudge anybody being fit or not. That's a personal choice, you know, whether you're physically fit or not.
Okay. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757 for Governor Jesse Ventura, who now, in addition to being a best-selling author, and he's had a flood of bestsellers since leaving the governor's office in 2003, he's now a talk show host on Aura TV, Off the Grid. It's about what Jesse wants it to be, and it airs 4 days a week, each episode live at 11 o'clock Central Time. So Jesse Ventura remains a prolific figure in public life. Will you ever run again?
I don't know. You know, you never, when you get my age, you learn to never say never. You know, you don't know what tomorrow brings necessarily. I could, I don't know, but right now I'm overjoyed to do this. This has been like a godsend to me, and I'm an atheist, so that's how big it is. For me, this may be the dream job, and it's when you go through life and you've had as many jobs as I have to declare one a dream job, that makes it pretty special.
You say you worship the sun.
Well, I just like to refer to George Carlin, who was another great atheist who had a great sense of humor and a great thing. That's what George said. He worshipped the sun because the sun brings food, the sun brings warmth, the sun brings light, and most of all, it comes up every morning and I can see it, which gives it great credibility.
297-5633, HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on with Governor Jesse Ventura.
Good morning, Governor and Mr. Jim. The thing I get out of your books and some of your reality shows is that your primary objective is to inform people that it's not what they know that hurts them about what their government is doing, but what they don't know. Would that be a correct assessment, Governor? Thank you.
I think that's pretty good. I think you're pretty close there. You know, certainly I comment on a lot of things that you do know about, but we certainly try to find out things you don't know about. I remember when I did the conspiracy theory show and we found out about that FEMA was building all these detention camps throughout America, and I got blasted on the floor of Congress for that one, for exposing that they're building these detention camps, and for who? So you're very correct there. We like to find out things that you don't know about that we feel you should know about. I remember one case a year or two ago on the defense bill where Senators Levin and McCain put an addition to the defense bill, an amendment on it, that allowed the U.S. military to operate freely inside our country. And you didn't hear any newscaster telling the public this. I was outraged over it. Since when do we need the U.S. military operating inside our country? We have police for that. And you saw an example of it at the Boston Marathon bombing, when you had tanks rolling down the street attempting to catch a fugitive. Since when do we need the U.S. military to catch a fugitive?
877-217-5757. Jesse Ventura in Mexico, but he did reveal that he watched the Super Bowl. And by the way, it is the most watched game in the history of television, most watched show in the history of television. Over 111 million people on the average were watching Sunday as Denver got blasted by Seattle 43-8. Yesterday, Walt Handelsman, the Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist, he called it the Pot Bowl, Jesse, because it featured teams from Colorado and Washington where marijuana is legal.
Well, we were referring it down here as the Stoner Bowl.
As the what?
down here off the grid, we were referring to it as the Stoner Bowl.
Okay.
You know, because you get stoned on pot.
I got you.
But I don't know. I kind of made the thought that, gee, if you want to get to the Super Bowl, you better legalize pot, because ironically, the two states that legalized it made it to the Super Bowl. So I hope that marijuana gets legalized across the country, because it has many purposes that people don't know about. Did you know that marijuana makes the best biodiesel fuel on the planet?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's something. Now, we're always in an energy crisis. That means we could start using marijuana to have fuel and let corn go back to be what it's supposed to be, and that's food. We're not supposed to use corn for fuel. But and marijuana, you can also make paper out of it. You can make clothing out of it. It has medicinal purpose. And here's my final argument. Did you know that the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and Betsy Ross's flag are all made out of marijuana?
I did not know that.
There you go, Jim. You learn something new every day.
If it was
good enough for Tom Jefferson, it ought to be good enough for you and I.
And Betsy Ross. Then it, according to Jesse Ventura, it should be good enough for the rest of us, which may be another reason why Jesse might have difficulty being elected president of the United States. What do you think about these politicians who say what it takes to win, or think they're saying what it takes to win, and they really don't believe it? For example, I would suspect there are more than a few politicians who say, I don't believe in evolution, when they really do, but they're pandering to the electorate. What do you say to people that?
Well, to me, if the one thing about me, people may disagree with me, and people may say, you know, I think Jesse Ventura is crazy for what he believes on that, but at least they're knowing what I really believe. They're knowing who I am and what I believe in. So, you know, I did it when I taught at Harvard. One of my classes was how pro wrestling prepares you for politics. And one of the reasons I made that comparison is, in pro wrestling, you may not be anything personally like what you are, the character that you portray. And I think a lot of these politicians are the same. What you see on TV is not what you really got. They play a role. They're different than me playing Jesse the Body or Macho Man Savage or whoever it might be. They're playing a part. We're playing a character. And I think it shows, because look at all these people that you find out in this Congress are gay, and yet they're working against gay laws, and they're pretending to show everyone that they're not really gay, they're hetero. You know, like the guy that got caught in the bathroom up in Minnesota. There was another congressman down in Florida who turned out was gay, and he was you know, passing and voting for all these things against gays. So,
hang tight. We'll be back with Jesse Ventura, the incomparable one, in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane producing, and our guest for a while longer is Governor Jesse Ventura, now a prominent figure on Off the Grid. That's his show on Aura TV. At 62, he's still kicking butt and taking names. Nate on Corsi. Nate, good morning. You're on with Governor Ventura.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Governor.
Hi, how you doing, Nate?
Good. I've got a quick question, then I'll hang up and listen. I happen to be from a small town in Texas, and I was curious as to why the governor is still suing the widow of Chris Kyle. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I'm suing. My federal lawsuit is against Chris Kyle and the book that he wrote because he fabricated a story that's a complete lie about me, and it's to clear my name. And this book is also going to go to a movie. I can't allow that to happen because what he wrote about me was completely fabricated. I can't discuss it yet because it's still in court. But let me assure the caller of this. Kyle's wife is not paying for anything. I'm taking on a multi-billion-dollar insurance company, the publisher's insurance company, and I might add, the insurance company and the publisher are all under the same News Corp that owns Fox News. So Chris Kyle's widow has not had to pay 1 cent in this. It's about clearing my name. It's not about money. And I will clear my name. And she is not footing the bill. A multi-billion-dollar insurance company is who I'm battling, although Fox News will try to make you think that I'm taking her on. I appreciate the call from the caller, and I'm glad. And I will clear the air of this court case on my show. You can count on it. We're due in court in May, the first week of May, when the truth will come out unless there's a settlement beforehand. But again, I am taking on a multi-billion-dollar insurance company. I am not taking on the widow. That's just the legal procedures that you have to do in which to achieve what I need to do, and that's clear my name.
Isn't it hard for a public figure to win a case like this?
I don't know, but if it didn't happen, you'd think you could win it, couldn't you, Jim?
Well, usually you have to prove that the author was malicious in addition to being untruthful.
Well, we will prove that. They were malicious. When you're called a traitor, that's not malicious.
It's up for a court to decide.
Yep, and okay. I'll let the courts decide it, and that's where it's going to end up, and I'll be happy to let the courts decide it. To clear my name. But again, people in Texas need to understand clearly, this is not costing the widow 1 cent of money. I'm taking on a billion-dollar. In fact, I'm the underdog here. I'm taking on the billion-dollar insurance company, and it's costing me money. It's costing me close to $500,000 to clear my name.
Rick Causey poses a question for Governor Ventura. Short of a revolution, what can we do to drastically change things in America to break the grip that money has on our democracy?
Well, that's a great question, and maybe we need a revolution. The word revolution doesn't necessarily have to be violent. You can have a revolution at the ballot box, and I will take the step that the caller didn't take it. We need a revolution. And we need that revolution at the ballot box. We have to quit voting for Democrats and Republicans and find alternative people, regular citizens, to go to Congress and to go to the Senate and all that, and get away from these two political gangs, these political parties that put themselves first and the country second.
Here's another question, if you can call it a question, more like a statement from Edgar, saying if the 2016 presidential election was between Hillary Clinton, Chris Christie, and Jesse Ventura, for whom would you vote? I'm sure you would relish a debate where you would be on the stage with those two.
Oh, I'd love to have that opportunity, and if I had ballot access in all 50 states, I could well be up on that stage with them, but that's the difficult thing. One of the questions I would ask them, I would tell you right now what I would run on, Jim. I would run on one thing, and you know what that would be if I did run?
What?
I would give the people of America the opportunity to make history with me by electing our first president who does not belong to a political party since George Washington. Isn't that astounding? George Washington, the father of our country, is the only president we've ever had that doesn't belong, that did not belong to a political party.
Well, there aren't many atheist former wrestler Navy SEALs running for president either.
Well, and, so let me clear up, too. You know, just because you're an atheist doesn't mean that you don't believe in things. It just believes I don't believe in a supreme being. I still believe that you shouldn't kill. I still believe you shouldn't steal. All the things that are on the Ten Commandments. That's right. Mel Brooks dropped one of them. So we ended up at 10, if you remember that. I'm making fun of the joke there. But you can still be an atheist and believe in the golden rule. Treat your fellow man as you would want to be treated. We have values, and people need to understand that. We just don't believe there's a supreme being. That's all it is.
Did you ever close any bridges when you were in Minnesota as governor?
Did I ever close a bridge?
As governor of
no,
Minnesota?
I did not. No, I certainly did not. Bridges are too critical to transportation. I don't know how you could possibly close a bridge knowingly just to make a political statement. That's unbelievable to me. I ran into the same thing. Let me give you a quick story, Jim. When I put in the first light rail line, mass transit in Minnesota, and I remember I had to sell the Republicans real hard on it, but the line was going right through a very poor district where they didn't own cars, many of the people, like 60%. And I tried to sell the Republicans saying, look, if they have transportation, they can get jobs and they can get off welfare. Don't you think that's a good idea? And you know what the Republican said to me? I was astounded. He looked at me and said, I don't have anyone elected down there. I don't give a damn. And that's what you've got. If they can't, if it isn't something that benefits that party politically, they will not support it, even though it's for the good of the country.
Do you believe Governor Christie when he says he didn't know about the bridge closure?
Well, I believe Governor Christie's between a rock and a hard place, because if he didn't know about it, that means who's running the ship? He's supposed to be the governor. He's supposed to be aware of all things of that nature. So if he did not know about it, then I would question his leadership ability. How come he didn't know about it? So he's caught between a rock and a hard place, because if he knew about it, it was horrible, and because he didn't know about it, that is also horrible. If subordinates are making the calls, then what is Governor Christie's role?
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on the air with Jesse Ventura.
Good morning. Governor Ventura, this case where you're relying on a court to clear your name, do you have any concern that the judge may be beholden to the corporate interests that you're up against?
I hope not. It's a federal judge. He has a great record up in Minnesota. I'm willing to let the facts fall the way they may. That's the American system. Well, if I lose the case, I'm already living out of the country, so I don't think it'll change much for me. But I am going to try to clear my name, because everything written about me was fabricated and a lie. And I have every right to try to clear my name, and I will continue to do so, which has always been my I offered from the start, if you would just come out and tell the truth and apologize, that we'd shake hands and leave it at that, but they wouldn't do it.
Did you ever play football, Jesse?
Yeah, I played football all through grade school, high school. I played a year of service ball, and I played 1 year of junior college ball.
So you know the game pretty well. And I'm
sure, and it's the same whether you're playing at a grade school level or you're playing it at the pro level. It's still the same game. It's just played by better people. That's all.
I'm sure you followed the Vikings in their day. I bet you like Joe Capp. I bet he was.
I enjoyed Joe Capp, but I also loved Fran Tarkin, and that's why I'm hoping. I got mad at the Vikings this year because they won some late games and dropped in the draft, because I would love to see the Vikings take Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M.
He's an exciting player. He's your kind of player,
a
maverick.
He's got Fran Tarkin in the Minnesota. Minnesotans would love to get him up there, because it would take us back to the days of Fran Tarkin again, because this kid can run around, and anybody that can put up 40 points back-to-back years on the Alabama defense is a hell of a football player.
What do you think about all this commotion regarding the Redskins changing their name?
I agree wholeheartedly with it. It's wrong. I was astounded when they had to, when Riley Cooper got in trouble for saying the N-word, and the NFL sent him the sensitivity training, and all the ESPN announcers, you know, made a big point about it. And the very next story was RG3 and the Washington, and the Washington, I refer to them as the I-word, the Washington I-words. I'll give an example, Jim, the simplest that there is. Could you walk up to a Native American that you did not know and call him a Redskin?
Well, I wouldn't do that.
No,
but
could you walk up to a Native American, you don't know him, and say, hey, Redskin, come over here?
I would expect him to punch me in the mouth.
There you go. And that answers the question for you right there.
But I do recall John Wayne and the Searchers saying, I'd rather be dead than be red.
There you go. That's why it's legal, because John Wayne said it and all the white people can rally behind it. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I'll give you an example. When I marched with the Native Americans when Washington came to town and played the Vikings, a young Native American brought me a copy of the Winona, Minnesota paper. This is a little town on the Mississippi River south of Minneapolis, Winona, Minnesota, 1863. And you know what it said in the paper? They had just raised the bounty to $200 per redskin you could kill and send to purgatory.
So is
this was a legitimate small-town paper. $200 back in 1863, that must have been equivalent to $20,000.
More than that.
Go out, kill a family of Native Americans, bring their bodies in, and you'd get $200 apiece for every red skin you sent to purgatory.
What year was that?
1863.
Amid the Civil War.
Right around then.
Yeah, that was the same time.
But imagine that. In other words, you could shoot them like you could shoot a squirrel.
Well, why is this an issue now, and it wasn't when Sonny Jurgensen was throwing passes for the Redskins and George Allen was coaching them, when Vince Lombardi was coaching them?
Probably because we lived in the 50s and 60s, and there hadn't been any rebellion or anybody questioning anything. When I worked for the NFL, I worked for them 3 years, 2 years with Tampa and one with Minnesota. I made it a point, and this was in 1990. I would only refer to Washington as Washington. I never used the last name because, to me, it's offensive. Like I said, you can't walk up to a Native American you don't know and say, hey, Redskin. Because, to me, that's okay, do we have a team called, say, the Birmingham Blackskins, and we depict them like buckwheat? Do we have a team out, say, the San Jose Yellowskins, and we portray them as Chinese? Of course not. Of course not. And one of the things I saw was interesting. I saw a guy wearing a coat once said, I'm a Cherokee, not a Redskin.
Well, what about the Fighting Irish and the Raging Cajuns? Are those unacceptable?
Those are fine, because those are fine. No different than the Florida Seminoles. If you're, what they're doing with Redskin, they're painting a broad brush over entire people.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the Raging Cajuns or you talk about the Fighting Irish, you're just talking about a specific group. You're not painting a broad brush.
Well, speaking of John Wayne, here was an American icon who made all these war movies, Jesse, and he never was in a war. What do you think of a guy like that?
Well, I bear no grudge. You know, people, I mean, he's no worse than Dick Cheney. In fact, he's less. Dick Cheney got 5 deferments. Normally, you only get 4. Dick Cheney's exceptional. He got 5 deferments. John Wayne never ran the Department of Defense. Dick Cheney got 5 deferments from the military, and yet under Bush 1 was made Secretary of Defense, the closest liaison between the military and civilian, having never served.
Yeah,
so I'm far more concerned about someone like Dick Cheney not serving than I am about John Wayne, because all John Wayne did was make movies. Dick Cheney ran the Department of Defense and was never in the military.
And he advocated war. Heartily.
Yeah, and Dick Cheney and those guys and George Bush, they fit a certain mold. They're the kind of guys who start a fight and then they hold your coat. You know, we all know people like that. We all grew up with people like that. You got the guy, he's the Rye wise guy, you're always talking. He always starts the fight, but somehow manages to hold your coat when the fight takes place.
Well, what'd you think of this Richard Sherman, considering loudmouths? The guy, he backs it up, doesn't he? The guy for the Seahawks, the cornerback.
Yeah,
all-pro.
He's a great player, but I thought that his display was horrible. It was despicable. You know, young kids look up to these players. I'm from the old Bud Grant school, the old coach of the Vikings. There shouldn't be any of these dances, in my opinion. It's all done for show, and it's done for ratings and excitement. Bud Grant, you know what he used to always say? Bud Grant would say, pretend like you've done it before. You know, when you score a touchdown, pretend that you've done it before.
Well, this month, February. Go ahead.
Look at Larry Fitzgerald, the great wide receiver of Phoenix.
Yeah, I love that guy.
His father, Larry Sr., taught him right. When you see Larry Fitzgerald score a touchdown, the first thing you will see, he will run over before he does anything else. He will run over and hand the ball to the referee.
He's a class act. But Muhammad Ali was a class act, too, and he was a loudmouth.
Sure he was, but he backed it up. But the point is, Ali did it to get a fight with Liston. He knew that if he didn't open his big mouth, he wouldn't get a shot at Liston for 3 or 4 more years. And he did it to gain a shot at Liston. I just think that, you know, Sherman's a great player. Don't get me wrong. He's probably the best cornerback in football. He could be even greater if he kept his mouth shut and didn't behave like he did.
All right. Well, Leslie writes that she finds it, I guess it's a she finds it appalling that a professional wrestler is talking about people shooting off their mouths.
Well, she needs to understand wrestling's a show if she hasn't realized that.
You're kidding.
You know, maybe I should smarten her up and say that, you know, she needs to understand it's show business, that I'm playing a character and that we're all characters. You know, that's the way it's done in that business. That's not who I am. You know, Jesse Ventura is a person that I played in professional wrestling to earn money because that's what the business required, heroes and villains. You had to be a villain. You had to be a hero, one or the other. That's the way it's no. I refer to wrestling as ballet with violence. Would she still be so upset if I were a ballet dancer?
Well, tell us what's coming up on Off the Grid.
Well, I'll be shooting it later today. I'll head off the grid, and we'll do some more shows today, and we'll find out what they got for me and what's touching me and what I want to talk about. And that's what I'll do for 10 to 12 minutes every day. And, you know, that last caller, too, should understand that I'm not just a wrestler, but I've also been a mayor and a governor.
And a best-selling author.
It's just part of my career. So to lump me as simply a wrestler, she finds that, well, then she's being very narrow-minded.
Well, I admire that about you. I think that we may need more politicians who are professional wrestlers.
Well, it prepares you for it. You're comfortable on the microphone. You're good in front of crowds. You know in every match that Murphy's Law is going to show up. Anything that can go wrong will, and you have to be able to think on your feet and think quickly.
Mm-hmm. And if a fight breaks out, you're not going to be holding somebody's coat.
Exactly.
Well, Jesse Ventura, it's Off the Grid, and you can get it on YouTube. And it's 4 days a week, 11 o'clock Central Time, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Governor. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim, and I'll tell people you can disagree with me. That's certainly the American way, but I'll always try to make you think.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We just heard from Jesse Ventura in Mexico. Now we're joined by the man from Mexico, Manuel Martinez, who is celebrating year number 30. It was 1984 that he came to Baton Rouge and has been recognized as one of the most renowned tailors in the world. Good morning, Manuel.
Good morning, Jim.
30 years.
30 years in Baton Rouge.
It's quite an investment.
It has, and I love every minute of it.
And most of the movers and shakers in our community, I'm sure at some time or another, have passed through the doors of Martinez's shop on Corporate Boulevard. And You spend much of your time here, but you also travel the world to find out what's going on in the world of fashion. I see today you're looking sharp, resplendent in blue. Could you describe what you have on for us this morning, Manuel?
Yes, I have a double-breasted suit. Matter of fact, double-breasted are back, and you will see quite a bit of double-breasted suits and blazers and so on. So, but what I have is a double-breasted with a glint plaid and a blue windowpane and accented by a light blue and brown color tie with a pale blue shirt.
It works for you. You even are quite meticulous in your selection of shoes and socks every day.
I'm looking
under the table now.
The devil is in the details, Jim. But let's talk about you. Look at the shirt you have. Wow. That aqua color shirt and the chili pepper tie is incredible. And by the way, that those color blues is what's in the style. That blog color blue or Facebook blue is
really
what's in the style when it comes down to shirts and suitings.
Well, when you say something is in style, some people believe colors are in style all the time, but it does come and go. How does that happen?
Well, let me be correct. Let me correct myself. It's fashionable to wear the colors that you're wearing today. A style is something that lasts forever. but, for example, the color shirt that you have on, it is the color of the season. But not only the color of the season, but you were able to pick it out because it accentuates the color of your blue eyes, which you look terrific.
Well, thank you, but you look good in blue, and I think those are brown eyes that I'm looking at, and you have olive-colored complexion. So for you, blue works. Blue usually works for just about anybody, doesn't it?
It does, but the color blue that I'm wearing is a dark blue compared to what you're wearing. You wear more of that aqua blue.
And I have a complexion that is lighter.
A very fair-complected, blonde-haired, and piercing blue eyes, so that aqua color accentuates the blue of your eyes.
And you get right down to the measurement of your collar. You say your collar should fit your facial look.
The shirt is very important because at the end of the day, once you have a look at the individual from head to toe and you're sitting across the table, what you're looking is from the chest up, from the chest mm-hmm. on above. So the way that the collar frames your face is very important.
Your shape, right?
Yeah,
if you're oval-faced, you wear what kind of collar?
A more narrower collar. And if if you have an oval shape, you wear a spread collar. And if you have a round face, you would wear a more narrower collar.
Mm-hmm. And you work with people of all kinds. I would imagine in the 30 years that you've been in business here and some years before that, men in particular, and most of your clients are men, we're getting bigger. How has that changed fashion?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because what's interesting that people are getting larger, but however, what today is in fashion is what is called the skinny suit. Now, you go figure. People are getting larger, and now they're showing the skinny suit. I don't know if you're familiar with the skinny suit, but it's a very narrow type of suit. The trousers are very narrow. The coat is short, and the lapels are very narrow. So that type of suit does fit, as the name says, somebody very slim, but not someone large.
Okay. And the average American probably needs to lose a few pounds. You can conceal that somewhat, but not totally.
Well, that's what we do. So a gentleman yesterday told me, he said, Manuel, said, what you do is not a science. It's more of an art. And where we can look at the individual, design the type of garment that will enhance the good and camouflage the bad. That's art. When you can give him a waist when he has no waist. When you can give him a chest when he has no chest. So that's the important thing. Knowing where to put the curves in that suit to flatter that individual. And you cannot get that in ready-mades.
297-5633, 877-217-5757 if you'd like to talk to the remarkable Manuel Martinez. In 1994, his operation was recognized in the city of Baton Rouge as a destination for businessmen to get custom clothing. And then in 1995, you were featured in Cigar Aficionado, And then in the later 90s, you got world recognition. So Manuel Martinez and Rudy.
Right.
You've been around for 30 years in this community. And there are some other places that specialize in fine clothing. One of the men who did it for many years, who's been on this show several times, is Jim Mayer. Do you have kind of a friendly competition with people like Mayer?
Yeah, well, yes. I haven't seen Jim in a long time, but I guess Jim was a friend, but I haven't seen him in a while.
Okay. Peter in Gonzales, JC. Okay. Peter, good morning. You're on with Manuel.
Good morning, Peter.
Manuel, this is Peter. You taught me how to measure my suits years ago. I couldn't afford one of your suits. A mutual friend introduced me to you, and I just want your audience to know that what you're doing is more than an art. It's a science as well. Because I was out of law school, and I wanted a nice suit, and Joanne, a good friend, mutual friend, who has moved on, she brought me there, and you showed me how to measure and how to buy off of the rack. And you said, eventually, you'll be able to afford my suits, but this is what you buy, and here's how you measure the waist. And since then, I've been known as one of the best dressed in my business because of the measurements that I learned from you, and I can buy off the rack with the measurements. So I bought from you since then, but I'm telling your audience that what you do is not only an art, but it's as well a science.
Well, thank you very much, Peter, for your kind compliments, and I do remember you, and all the best to you.
297-5633 is your number. Manuel Martinez with us, and he is a man who preaches fine fashion. He's always impeccably dressed, no matter whether it's the grocery store or the bowling alley. You're going to see Manuel in some fine threads. Now, you have in the past lamented, and so have I, people who show up for work in places where business is conducted who aren't dressed as nicely as you, and that would include me sometimes too. It makes a statement, doesn't it?
It does. You know what I think? What I think of dressing is it's about respect. And today, on the world of changes and uncertainty, one thing that holds together is value. And I think a gentleman should dress in a sort of respectful way, to respect to himself and to others. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, he once was interviewed and asked, why do you always dress in a suit? He said, because I have respect for others.
Well, Eli Jones, who was the head of the business school at LSU for a few years and now is at the University of Arkansas, he used to show up for class dressed like you, coat and tie, suit, looked quite elegant. And he was teaching students who wanted to be in the business world, and he was showing them that it's not only what you know, but sometimes it's how you look.
Yes, it is. And I did have the pleasure of meeting Dean Jones with the business school, and I was asked to ask to the MBA program.
Debbie on Airline Highway. Debbie, good morning. You're on with Manuel Martinez.
Hey, good morning. So my question is, if Manuel has female clients?
Debbie, very few female clients. My main expertise are in designing and dressing gentlemen and making custom clothes for gentlemen, the sport coats.
Well, sometimes women come in to pick out things that would look good on their significant other's backs, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're glad to say that probably I would say 40% of the ladies that come to our shop, that's because they want their husbands or their significant others to dress well.
And some women wear ties. Sarah Crocky does it very well.
Yeah.
So how do you like it when a woman dresses in clothes that would be appropriate for a man?
Well,
it looks good, doesn't it?
And some ladies, it looks very nice. It's all about your individualistic taste, you know, what the type of personality you want to project and who you are.
But you said the only time you've worn blue jeans is when you've been in the woods.
I wear blue jeans sometimes after the storms to clean my yard or if I'm out in the woods.
But this is a town that loves blue jeans. People show up for work. Professors go to campus. People actually are working at the state and for LSU and some businesses, and they go to work in blue jeans. Is that okay?
Well, that's quite okay. I just don't see why everybody has to look the same. I think there should be some kind of individualistic look.
Okay. You got them revved up, Manuel. We're going to take as many of you as we can, and hopefully people want to talk to Manuel Martinez. Deborah in South Downs. Hi, Deborah. Good morning. You're on with Manuel.
Good morning, Deborah.
Yes,
I am not dressing a significant other. I'm dressing a son who is growing like a weed. And at this point, he really is needing dress clothes, although I don't want to spring for a suit because of the rate he's growing at. He grew about 4 inches this last year. What can I do to set him up in some kind of dress clothes that, you know, are... in a budget, and I'll take your calls off the air.
Okay. I do.
I would have to know a little bit more about his size, how tall he is, and so on. But if he's growing fast, too fast, the thing to do is, for example, is buy his coats a little longer and the sleeves a little longer, maybe half an inch or so in the longer side. And also, when you buy his trousers, buy him just a little one size larger. I know that he's not gonna look very fitted, but if that's your concern, that's the way I would buy them. Or have a tailor to alter them and make sure they do not cut the excess fabric on the garment so they can be let out 6 months down the road. That's the best advice I can give you.
And we were talking about Richard Sherman, the cornerback for the Seahawks. He's the best, and he knows he's the best, and he says he's the best. Do you think you're the best?
I'm humble if you think that I'm the best, but I have talents that the good Lord has given me, and I use the best of my ability.
I think that's a yes. And sometimes you have to pay to get the best. Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, good morning. You're on with Manuel.
Good morning to the two of you. I'm calling to ask whether Mr. Martinez has considered sponsoring interns interested in the industry the way John Best does with young people in the food industry.
All right. What about interns?
I had several interns over the years. And some of them have moved on to New York, Houston, and other parts of the country.
Where is the fashion center? Is it still New York City?
New York City.
That's where it happens.
That's where it happens. But now brought to Baton Rouge. It's happening here in Baton Rouge.
So what's the difference between New York and Los Angeles?
Los Angeles is a little bit more relaxed on their dressing. And New York always sets the trends and the style.
Mm-hmm.
But Los Angeles is more laid back.
Is it a weather-related thing?
Perhaps the weather has a lot of influence because in New York you have three seasons. And you got to love the clothes for the fall. I mean, it just drapes so well, and it looks very nice.
So where does Baton Rouge stand between New York and Los Angeles? Are we more like the West Coast or the East Coast?
No, we dress southern. We use color during the summertime, the spring. Look at the weather here, with exception of what we had here the last couple of weeks. Most of the time, it's 80 degrees or so. So you can't wear those.
Well, last week it wasn't 80 degrees.
No, that's what I'm saying. When exception the last couple of weeks.
Were you open last week, Manuel? I bet you were fitting people in your store.
I was. I did work for those 2 days that, that most people were closed.
Well, in the year 2001, Manuel was deemed the great honor of representing the United States at the World Congress of Tailors in Paris. What did you do there?
Well, in Paris, I designed a suit that was a throwback from the Rat Pack from the 60s, mohair and wool, and it was a blue, it was an incredible blue suit, sort of a medium shade of blue. And I'm happy to say that we won in our category in Paris.
In Paris?
Yes.
This guy from Baton Rouge. Paul in Opelousas. Hi, Paul. Good morning. You're on. Hi, Paul.
Two questions quick. Doing good. Mr. Martinez, where are you located, and do you dress big men?
I'm located in Corporate Boulevard, 7680 Corporate Boulevard, and yes, I do make clothes for big people.
And as I stated, Manuel, he everything is meticulous. You do it from scratch, so people like you who do your kind of work and have the reputation you do, you're going to pay a little more than if you go to a regular place. So you have to be prepared for that if you choose to do business with our fine guest, Nicholas. Nicholas, good morning. You're on with Manuel Martinez.
Don Manuel, I have a question about, well, I guess it doesn't apply really to what you're doing, but why did you select to live in Baton Rouge as opposed to, say, New York City or Los Angeles?
Well, my wife selected Baton Rouge. I wanted to live in New York and Dallas, but my wife's from Louisiana, and that's pretty strong enough reason for me to be here, and we have enjoyed every minute of it.
But is it important that you think about going somewhere else?
At this point in my life?
No, at any point over the last 30 years.
Oh, of course. About 15 years ago, I wanted to move to New York. Matter of fact, we have a showroom in New York, and I've been traveling to New York for the last 14 years to see clients in New York at the showroom.
Well, we're glad you spent 30 years here in Baton Rouge, and this is a guy who loves his job. There's no doubt about it, Manuel.
Thank you.
Loves what he does. Thank you, sir. Let's talk again. You got him fired up this morning. See you again soon, Manuel.
Well, thank you, and dress well, my friends.
We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.